Well, good morning. So my name is Jake Scott. Maybe you've forgotten about me. It's been so long. I've missed you. No. It was like 3.5 weeks. And I was like, oh my goodness, this could go good or could go poorly. It's going poorly. And with that, let's close in prayer. No, I'm going to keep going. So when this happens, like, I get kind of like hopped up on Mountain Dew a little bit, you know, emotionally, because it's been a while. So we'll see how this goes today. But that's the first thing I want to say. I'm so happy to be up here. I have so much like energy. I've missed you guys. I've missed doing this. And it's been like 3.5 weeks. And second thing I want to say is about how hard Amy Chaney's been working recently on this open harbor she talked about. She really had a vision for how do we get people who are not involved, not plugged in, not taking steps in their faith, to begin to take steps, to begin to get involved, join a group, serve, you know who God made them to be. And so that's what Open Harbor is. I mean, if you're here and you're involved and you're serving, it's, you know, you can move right along. But if you're someone who has questions about this community, you want to know how to get plugged in, not sure if you want to get plugged in or not, Amy saw that, and she set a goal to, like, man, let's create an environment for those people. So she's worked really, really hard for months, and it starts today. And I just wanted to acknowledge the work that Amy's done for months on helping people get plugged into our community as easily and as efficiently as possible. So with that, 17% of people say that they personally struggle with selfishness. 60% of married people say their spouse does. It's true. Those are true. And I don't know how that's possible. No way, I do. I've been around people enough to know that I know how that's possible, right? We are better at seeing other people's flaws, seeing other people's shortcomings, looking at other people and being more in touch with how they are imperfect than how we are imperfect. There's a guy, he's a therapist, and his name is Jeremy Sherman. He's a PhD, he's an author, and he calls this delineation. He said that we make lines between other people's flaws and our flaws. It's a line of delineation where we see other people's flaws and we can point those flaws out more easily than we can our own. He says one more interesting thing about delineation. He says that if you see a flaw in someone else and you point that flaw out to them verbally, it makes that flaw of theirs hyper-focused. You see it with real, like, sharpness and acuity. And it actually makes you less able to see that exact same flaw in yourself. So that you can see that flaw more obviously, more clearly, more regularly in them, and it negatively impacts your ability to see that flaw in yourself almost indefinitely. And so when you begin to see and focus in on the flaws of others, it hyper-intensifies that flaw, and it brings to the background your own flaw. And you can kind of see this in relationships, right? Like if someone says to someone else who you're in a relationship of some sort, and you say, "Oh, you're such a hypocrite," that's almost always ironic. Because there have been moments when you were hypocritical, and what happens is when you say, "You're such a hypocrite," You can call back to memory all the 17 times in the last year that person's been hypocritical, and it actually makes you unable to remember yours. He's talked about how, like, the tolerance is a virtue and a vice, because the moment someone says, "I'm tolerant," and by the way, tolerance is such a low bar for each other, by the way, but if you say, you pride yourself on being a tolerant person, what happens is you like that about yourself, "I'm tolerant," and then you see someone who is maybe less tolerant than you, and what happens? You become intolerant of them, and you don't even see it, right? And it's like, "I'm so tolerant," other than people who are intolerant, right? You don't see it, and what happens is you create this line of delineation between that person's flaws and your own, and you become hyper-aware of their flaws, and you can't even see your own. You're incapable of seeing that flaw in yourself. Because what you choose to focus on in your relationships has the power to determine your relationships. What you choose to focus on in your relationships has the power to make your relationships long-term sustainable, meaningful, life-giving, encouraging, or has the power to make it destructive and tense and constantly on the rocks and constantly marked by frustration and hurt feelings. Like, what you choose to focus on has the power to determine your relationships. Last week, my notes say last week, but it was 2 weeks ago. Thank you, Winter Storm Harper. Which, by the way, my daughter's name is Harper, and I've always known there'd be an intense weather pattern named Harper at some point. It was prophetic. I was like, oh, Winter Storm Harper's canceling church. Not surprised, right? But anyway, so 2 weeks ago, Amy kicked us off in a series called Love Like That. It's 5 weeks on relationships. Not necessarily romantic relationships. It can be friend, it can be family, it can be coworker, parent, child, all relationships. And it's based on a verse in Ephesians 5:2, which in the message, which says, observe how Christ loves you. His love is not cautious, but extravagant. He didn't love to receive something from us, but give of himself to us. And it ends with a three-word challenge, love like that. We believe that if you love like Jesus loved, if you enter into your relationships the way that Jesus entered into his, it'll make our relationships healthier, more meaningful, more encouraging. And so we're spending 5 weeks on this verse of how can we love like Jesus loved. In his longest sermon he ever gave in Matthew's chapter, it's called the Sermon on the Mount, and part of it is in Matthew chapter 7. He gives us these six verses in Matthew 7, 1 through 6, that at first glance, they don't appear to be about relationships. At first glance, they appear to be about people there's like some separation there. But then as you begin to dive in, you see that it really is words for people when you're in a relationship with someone. Like, how do you approach that person? How do you focus on that person? Do you focus on the good? Do you focus on the bad? Do you focus on how the person is flawed, how they are imperfect? Or do you focus on what their strengths are? And then what that does to the relationship, what that does in your heart. And it's these beautiful, almost very concise, short passage that says a lot about how to have healthy relationships. And it's in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. If you have a Bible, I invite you to turn there. If you don't have a Bible at all, I invite you to take one on your way out. Use your phone. It'll be on the screens. There's 100 ways you can get access to these. But I'm going to read the entire thing, and we're going to go back through it. It says this. It says, do not judge others, and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of the speck in your eye, when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. And don't waste what is holy on people who are unholy, and don't throw your pearls to pigs. They will trample the pearls, then turn and attack you. So what you have is we start, and we're going to go back through these slowly, and what you have starting in verse 1 is you have two, it breaks down to kind of like three sections, but two of them give sort of really practical advice on relationships, and we're going to have a tool that represents each of these sections, which is why when you have a tool, you keep them in a toolbox. This is my toolbox. You thought I would have cleaned it out before I brought it. No, I didn't. There's like 3,700 random screws at the bottom. They're still there. I don't know why I didn't take them out beforehand. But anyway, so this passage breaks down to two sections, and each one has a tool that represents it. And the first section is verses 1 through 4, and we're going to read it here. It says, do not judge others, and you will not be judged. This is every pot smoker's life verse. You have any pot smokers in the room? I'm just kidding. Don't raise your hands. We're talking about not judging one another. And if you raise your hands to that, a room full of church people, you're going to make my job that much harder. So just keep it down. Yeah, man. No, stop. All right. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? There's two things about this passage that this week, as I was preparing, like it really stuck out to me, and it made things I noticed about this passage I had never noticed before. and made me really, really passionate about it, and kind of set my heart on fire for this passage and this relationship series. And the first one is who he's talking to and the context he's talking to them about. You see in verse 3, give me verse 3 again, David. It says in verse 3, it lets you see something that I had never seen before. And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye? I'd always heard this verse about like the log in your eye and the speck in someone else's eye and don't judging in terms of you and people you're separated from, or like groups of people or people who are different than you, or people who like you don't interact with on a daily basis, but you stand back in judgment from them. But verse 3 says, why look at the speck in your friend's eye? This is about people you are in relationship with. This is about people you're close with. And so when you're close with to people, you have the ability to use a magnifying glass. And the thing about a magnifying glass is, to use a magnifying glass, you have to be close to them. I can't use this magnifying glass and magnify you guys. You guys just become blurry. If I want to use a magnifying glass on somebody, I have to get close to them. Like, I have to get really close to John before I can see how his pores are getting larger. No, it's good. You know, normally, crow's feet don't make people look more attractive. But in your case, David, that's still true. No, I'm just kidding. He moisturizes. I know. It's working. But the magnifying glass, like, what does a magnifying glass do? It makes small things bigger. If I'm going to see a speck or a splinter in someone's eye, it has to be someone I'm close to. Right? I'm not going to be able to see a splinter in Elise's eye from here. I'm going to have to get closer before I can see that in her eye. It's someone that I'm in relationship with. I'm not going to be able to use this with someone from across the mall or I've never actually talked to. Like, this is someone who I have to be close with. But this is a powerful tool because it makes small things bigger. It makes small things big things. It reinforces things. It makes things seem like they are bigger things than they actually are. Like, if I see a speck in someone's eye, it means I'm close to them, but when I look at it through the magnifying glass, that speck looks bigger than it is, and I begin to magnify that, and I focus on that, and I see that. And the thing is, we are Jedi level, ninja level, like Old West gunfighter quick with the magnifying glass. When we see something in someone's eye, like, oh my goodness, you just did that again. Why would you, that thing, I can't believe that you just hurt my feelings again. Again, I asked you to do this thing and you didn't do it. I can't believe. I see the speck in your eye and I get my magnifying glass out. And I get my magnifying glass, You know, recently, my son, he had a test. It was a math test, and he had to show his work and on a separate piece of paper and then turn them both in. He didn't turn in the work paper. He forgot. He didn't follow that instruction. And so he got like half credit on the test, which means his test started at like 50%. And so he ended up getting like a 45 or a 40 on this test. And we got the report back home, and he had to come home and sign it. And we're like, oh, man, like, you got to focus. You got to pay more attention. And what is that? We held a magnifying glass up to like the splinter in his eye. And then a week later, like, he got a quiz that he forgot about, and so he didn't study for it well enough, and so he got a bad grade on it. And what do? We held the magnifying glass up to it again, and then he had a homework assignment that he did, and he brought to school with him, but he had left in his backpack. He never gave it to his teacher, so he got a zero on it. And there was like a couple things right in a row that, like, he just, you know, dropped some balls, didn't follow instructions. And every time it happened, literally every time it happened, we're like, hey, man, like, what happened here? Like, there's a speck in your eye and you didn't do this thing you're supposed to do. And we're magnifying it and it's making this small thing look bigger. And what did it do? It caused frustration. It caused hurt. It caused tension. He's like, every time we talk about my homework or my school, it's bad stuff. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you're right. You're right. You messed up. And we just reach for the magnifying glass to find the speck in your eye, to judge you, to treat you in that way. And we made a small thing a big thing. But the thing is, if you hold a magnifying glass, I could do this in practice. Let's see if I can do it again today. If you hold a magnifying glass on the same spot at the same time long enough, then what happens? So there it is. What happens is you can actually start fires with it, right? You can burn people. If I held this here long enough, it would scar me forever, right? And that's what happens when someone magnifies something the same way, in the same rhythm, at the same time, over and over. If you make the small thing a big thing over and over and over again, it has the capacity to do real damage to that person and to your relationship. And so you have this ability that you can burn someone and scar someone forever. Because it makes a small thing into a big thing. Because a magnifying glass is a powerful tool. But the thing is, if a magnifying glass is a powerful tool, it can also has the power to do good. You see, what happened is when he called us out, he's like, we always talk about school when I do something wrong. I was like, oh my goodness, you're right. Like, I was just like, ugh. I was so humbled by that. And so you know what we did? We changed the way we approached it. When he's at the island and he spends an hour doing homework, we notice it. We're like, oh my goodness, my man. Like, I can tell you're working so hard. I'm so proud of you. Look at this vocabulary quiz. You got a 92 on it. Oh my goodness. I know this represents hard work. I'm so proud of you. Man, you've been working so hard at school recently. Let's go to a movie and get some popcorn just for us to let you know that we've noticed you. And what is that? That is a magnifying glass. That is, you know, the passage says, and you will be treat you, and as you treat others is how you will be treated. I mean, if I treat him with grace, if I treat him with love, if I magnify the good in him, what did it do to our relationship? It made our relationship healthier. It made it more trusting. It made the conversation of homework go more smoothly. And practically, it made his grades go up. There's this guy named Robert Rosenthal. And he was a Berkeley professor. He was a psychologist. He's an author. He's a PhD. And he built his career on this thing called the expectancy effect. And he said that if you use 5 words regularly in your relationships, that people will accomplish their goals. They will work harder to move themselves forward, that they will accomplish and have more grit, have more determination in them accomplishing who they want to be and towards their goals. And those 5 words are, I knew you could do it. 6 words. These 6 words. I knew you could do it. I knew you could do it. You know, I knew you. There was a moment there when you wanted to give up, but I knew you could do it. It was going to be hard, but I knew you could do it. It would have been easier to quit. I knew you could do it. And if you use these words with people, it's going to make them work harder, have more determination, work towards their goals. It's going to help your relationship. It's going to build that because your relationship has the power to be changed, to be made stronger or weaker based on what you choose to focus on. I like going to the grocery store. And I like it because I get to go by myself. I listen to music or a podcast in my headphones. Sometimes I'll be dancing in the aisles and I'll see people I know and I'll stop dancing immediately. And that's true. But when I get home, like, it's no messing around. It's no longer time to party. Like, I'm one trip Wally. I'm gonna have bags all up and down my arms, and I need like an 8-foot like berth to get into the house because I got bags on so many arms, and you know, bags on my arms, and I'm, you know, knocking stuff off the shelf, but it's okay because I did it in one trip. But one time, as I'm carrying the bags in, my wife goes, wow, look at your arms. These arms? Really? You know what? I did go to the gym 3 weeks ago. I'm not surprised you noticed. Actually, I'd have been surprised if you didn't notice. Thank you. You're right. Right? Now, we've been together for like 18 years, you know, 5 dating, married for 13. Obviously, at some point along the way, I know she's attracted to me. Why that? What is that? She's making a small thing a big thing. She's making me feel loved. It doesn't take much. The magnifying glass is a powerful tool. It can do damage, it can scar, or it can build up. As you treat people is how you'll be treated. What you choose to focus on has the power to determine your relationships. Then it goes on. The passage goes on in verse 5. It says this, "Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye. Then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye." And you realize here that the magnifying glass is no longer what's called for, but what's called for now is a mirror. And there's two things about this passage that I really had never noticed before and I really appreciate about. And the first one is that it's about people you're in relationship with. Not people who you have distance from. It's people that you know and you love and you talk to regularly. And the second one is this, is that when it says speck, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see enough to see the speck in your friend's eye. So this verse was originally written in a language that's called Aramaic. It was spoken by a guy named Jesus. And then after he spoke it, it got translated to English. And some words are translated better than others. This word speck, if it was more accurately translated, would be a word splinter. And the thing about a splinter and a log is they're made of the same thing. They're fundamentally the same thing. Because the thing that frustrates you about others oftentimes says more about you than it does them. Right? If you're in the grocery store and you see a woman who is struggling because she has 3 kids and they're unruly and they're fighting and they're running and they're screaming and they're knocking things off shelves, you can be like, oh, look at her. Look at her unruly children. Look how terrible those kids are. She's doing such a bad job. But we've all had those moments. If you have kids, you know we've all been there. So what is that? That's someone who has lost control momentarily in an aspect of your life, and you're someone who needs control. And that's a mirror moment for you. You can look at someone and say, that dude, he's always smiling. That's fake. It's phony. It's obnoxious. No one is that happy. Welcome to New England, buddy. Go back to Texas, right? Right? It's like, we don't smile. We are miserable. Go away, right? And it's fake. It's phony. But what is that? That person's happy, and it highlights to you that you don't live with joy in your life. That's a mirror moment. The thing that you judge others for, it says more about you than it does them sometimes. You can look at people, maybe they're holding their picket signs and they're on the side of the road. You're like, those angry losers, what are they doing? Don't they know no one cares what they think? Yeah, but they are invested. They're passionate. They're investing their life into something. If you feel like you're not investing your life into something, those people will irritate you. If you have passions in your life, you're like, oh, good for them. They're passionate about something. But if not, it becomes a mirror moment. What we do and say about others, what frustrates it about others, oftentimes says more about us than it does them. If you're dating someone and they get a text message and they chuckle at whatever it says and they put it away and you're like, who's texting you? Who does that say more about? You or them? That's a mirror moment. If you grew up in a family that dealt in the economy of anger, and now you use anger relationally as a tool to get what you want, to move people, and when people don't give you what you want, when you have to get angrier and angrier and angrier, and you find yourself frustrated at these people over and over and over again. I've been angry at you 17 times in the last 7 days for the same thing. Why can't you learn? That's a mirror moment, not a magnifying glass moment. Because what did he say? He says, first get rid of the log in your own eye. Then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. And this is what happens, right? We live in this sort of tension of, I am able to see what's going on in your life better than I can my own. I am able to point out what's going on in you. And what does Jesus say? He says, don't judge. He says, treat others the way you want to be treated. He says, worry about what's in your eye. What's funny is he never says, get the speck out of that person's eye. He never says that. He never gets to the point where you have to change people. You have to fix people. That person with that flaw, that's your. He never says that. He says, your responsibility is your own eye. You love that person. That person is your friend, present tense, which means you can't change the people that you are in relationship with all the time, but you still need to be in relationship with them. So there are times and moments when it's magnifying glass time, When you see something in someone and you want to be treated with love and grace, and so you treat them with love and grace because you'll be treated as you treat others. And there are moments when you're frustrated, you're angry, you're impatient, and it says more about you than it says something about them, because it's a splinter in their eye but a log in your own. And we keep going in verse 6. And what's powerful about this passage and what's freeing about this passage is how I said originally that what you choose to focus on has the power to determine your relationships, because I couldn't say that what you choose to focus on will determine your relationships, because sometimes we are in relationships that are too broken, that are too flawed, that even if we choose to focus on the best, that relationship can't possibly be healthy, because every relationship is only as healthy as the least healthy person in it. And so it has the power to determine, but it won't always determine, because there are people who are incapable of love. There are people who are incapable of grace. The Bible says, love your neighbor as yourself, but there are some people who hate themselves. And so they can't possibly be in a healthy relationship. And so look at verse 6 with me. Verse 6 says this: live a life filled with love. Sorry, we're looking at Matthew 7, verse 6. It's okay. I got it here. Matthew 7, 6 says this. It says, don't waste what is holy on people who are unholy. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. They will trample the pearls, then turn and attack you. See, what's holy is who God made you. How God gifted you, how he made you, how he formed you. He knew you before you were formed. He looked at you and saw you were good. You were a masterpiece. And so he says, don't waste what is holy on people who are unholy. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. What he's talking about here, he says, they will trample the pearls, then turn and attack you. He's talking about people. This whole passage is about how you interact with people and how you focus on the imperfections of the people around you. He says, there are some people who are pigs, and you will give them love and you will give them grace, and they will turn around and they are not capable of giving you love and giving you grace. And in a room like this, there are people who have experienced this. Maybe it's you experienced it in divorce. Maybe you experienced it because those were your parents. Maybe you experienced it because that was a friend or a sibling. And someone who was not capable of love and grace. And what does he say? Don't throw your pearls before pigs. Don't throw your pearls before swine, because they will trample them and they will turn and they will attack you. And chances are there are people in here who this sounds very, very, very familiar to their first what marriage, or very, very familiar to how their parents dealt with them. They would give them their best, they would focus on the good, and still it wasn't enough for that person. I've talked to countless people who it was never enough for their parents. They would do their best, they would work hard, and their parents would say, it's not enough, it's not enough, it's not enough. I've talked to people who had marriages that crumbled because the person they were married to was just incapable of a healthy relationship. But what does it say here? It doesn't say that both people are pigs. If they're a pig, you're still pearls. If they were a pig, you can still be pearls. It doesn't define you. Broken relationships don't mark you forever. Like if you had a divorce, or if your parents, you were never enough for them, you are still pearls. You're still holy. You're still who God made you to be. I mean, Ephesians 5, 2, what does it say? It says, observe how Jesus loves you. Jesus, the creator and the sustainer of the world, loves you. He died for you. And if he loves you, if someone else, one random person, someone, maybe it's who you were born to, or maybe someone you first married to, or someone you were in a relationship with, and they looked at you, and they saw you, and you never measured up, guess what? Jesus says, you are holy and you are pearls. And so that doesn't define you. If there was someone who always, always, always had the magnifying glass out to you so long that it burned you and it left you with scars, and ever since then, what do? You do this. You look at yourself with a magnifying glass. Every relationship is only as healthy as the least healthy person in it. If they were pigs, it doesn't make you not pearls. There's this quote. And I'll close with this, by a guy named Fyodor Dostoevsky. And he says this: to love a person means to see them as God intended them to be. It's not to see them who they are today, not to see who they are now, to see, like, to focus on the flaws, to focus on what's imperfect about them, to focus on how they hurt you or whatever. No. To love someone means to see them as God has intended to be, them to be. That if God has his way and if God has his day, who they will eventually end up being. To love someone means to see them that way. This is also how we have to look at ourselves if we're going to be in healthy relationships. We have to see who we are, not based on who we are today or who we've been or who's walked away from us or who's rejected us or who's told us we're not enough, but we have to see ourselves through this lens of who God has intended us to be. And maybe, just maybe, if your relationship isn't healthy, it's because you don't see you the way God intended you to be. So that's you. If you're someone who you were with someone and they always held the magnifying glass up to you, I invite you to pray with us after service. We'll have prayer servants in the back of the room over here. Man, begin to pray through. Jesus, how do you see me? How do you love me? How do we move forward in life this way? If you are someone who always does this, who always looks at themselves with contempt, with judgment on themselves because other people have left you or judged you, man, begin a long journey of redemption. That Jesus loves you. Observe how Jesus loves you. So in relationships, when you reach for the magnifying glass, it's powerful, but magnify the good. And sometimes you have to realize that the things that frustrate you about others really says more about you. But if you've experienced brokenness in a relationship in the past, know that sometimes there are pigs, but you can still be pearls. With that, let's pray. Jesus, thank you for this. Thank you for the way that you treat us with love and you treat us with grace, and that at no point is there a way that we can out-wrong your love, that your love covers all, that there's nothing we can do that can make you love us less. And so because you love us and you have grace for us, we can love and have grace for the people around us. And God, it's so easy to look at others and to immediately focus in on what's broken about them and what's flawed about them, and to not, and have that reinforced for us that that's a bigger problem in their life than it is ours. And so God, be with us this week and in our relationships, maybe a spouse or a child or a coworker or a friend. God, give us the wisdom and the clarity of insight to see when we have focused more on other people's flaws than our own. We need to put down the magnifying glass and pick up the mirror. But God, this whole thing is based on Ephesians 5:2. This whole thing falls apart unless we know how much you love us. Like, we are not pearls because look at us, we're pearls. No, we're pearls because you made us pearls. We're pearls because you loved us into pearls. God, we are not holy on our own. We are holy through you. When it says don't give what is holy to what is unholy, God, the only reason why we're holy is because you sent your son who died on the cross for us. And that is where our holiness comes from. That is what defines us. And if when we enter into a relationship with that as the foundation, focusing on those things has the power to determine the health, the longevity, the meaningfulness, the encouragement of our relationships. So Jesus, I thank you for your words. I thank you for this passage on how to interact with people, how to fix our focus. And I thank you that when you look at us, when you focus on us, you see that is my child and I love them so, so, so much. And I'm so proud of them. That defines our lives, even in moments when we don't even realize it. Jesus, I thank you for it. Thank you for all the relationships that we have. Thank you for the fact that you made us relational beings so that we can live marked by you in those relationships and we can use those relationships to make your name famous. God, we love you and we thank you. In your name, amen.